I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
You duck over Boston Celtics, Taco Fall, who is 7'5". You duck over Taco, you win.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Pressure free throw for Davis.
And now you got a box out, too.
Oh, Tim LeBron has hit it.
Way to make it interesting there, Anthony Davis.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Ryan Newman off turn four for the final time. Blaney to the outside. To the inside. Here comes Hamlin up the outside.
Wow.
Crash into the wall, into the air. Goes Newman.
Upside down.
In a shower of sparks on his roof, Ryan Newman comes across the line for
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you. Happy Tuesday, everybody.
What is happening? Nice little three-day weekend, man.
It's always nice to get those once in a while.
A little extra day off. And just added benefit that it was a beautiful, gorgeous day yesterday.
Yeah, it was. I went to the zoo too early, so it was cold and cloudy and a little drizzly. And then when I left, I'd say about 20 minutes later, blue sky for the last 5 hours of the day.
Just perfect. Anything pre-10 a.m. and like post 5:30, I feel like you're going to get that cold winter air.
Yeah, it's not going to be good.
But in between there, you get that sweet spot, little sunshine on you. It feels fantastic, man. It's going to be nice all week.
It's there's no better feeling than having Sunday feel like Saturday.
I also would put
that on the record.
It is such a good, because you get the Sunday scaries, whereas the day's going on, you know you got to go back to work the next day. And I golfed on Sunday. I played terrible, so I was already pissed, but I got done at like 3:30, kind of 4-ish, and that's right when the Sunday scaries start to sink in.
Close to dinner time is right. Like, wait a minute.
I got to make dinner, and then it's going to be dinner's over.
And it's bedtime.
And then I got to get up for work tomorrow.
I have to work for 3 hours. This is not an easy life that we live.
And it was such a good feeling. I stayed up, watched all my good Sunday night HBO programming live. No saving it for the DVR. Did The Outsider. Did Curb Your Enthusiasm last week tonight. It was phenomenal.
So I have a question about HBO. I'm glad you brought this up.
Okay, fire away.
I recently cut HBO.
You did, yeah.
This was not an easy decision for the Sprague household, but I thought, outside of like three shows, I don't really utilize it. I know these new shows are always popping up. The Outsider sounds awesome.
Great show. We got into it on Friday night because we hadn't watched any of it, the fiance and I got into it Friday night, all the way caught up.
How many episodes were you behind?
Six. So we did three Friday night and three Saturday night.
Don't have kids. And then the binging ability with kids will go down the drain.
But no, I actually, not to cut you off on your HBO point, it is such a great example of why it's nice to wait to start a show. Because Netflix has ruined me. I can't wait a week now. Because you get shows on TV, you watch it on a Sunday, you got to wait for the next Sunday. So waiting for like a month and a half to start this show, I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to like it. And it was like Friday night, nothing else on TV. Let's dive in. Let's see how we like it. Boom, roped. And you can rattle through six episodes like that.
So I'm coming from a place, I admittedly do not know your fiance all that well. We're familiar with each other. We're very friendly. I can't wait for the wedding. I don't know really what she likes, what she doesn't like. How much of what you guys watch is dictated by your interest in it and her just kind of like, okay, versus she's like, hey, we have to keep watching that show. It's an awesome show.
A good 75% of it's dictated by me. Okay. But I know and understand her tastes.
Sure.
So I can like The Outsider. I knew that was going to be a show she would be into.
Well, if 75% of the shows are dictated by you, do you know her taste or are you just calling on her taste? It's now your taste 75% of the time.
you know, you slowly become like your partner, right? The longer you're with them.
100%. So, I hated crime and thrilling stuff.
Sure, now you're into it.
And now all we watch is mainly the wife's like, hey, I heard this is good. And I'm like, okay, let's see it. And I'm always like, oh, I'm into it now.
Hell, you're even reading the Harry Potter books now, man.
I am, yeah. The wife got me into it.
You're diving into the magical realm.
And that's not to say, by the way, there's any regret or any sentiment towards the other person of like, you're kind of pushing your interest down my throat.
Right.
It's more of a, if you open your eyes to some things and give something a chance, you might end up finding out you also enjoy it. And that's kind of where I'm at in my relationship.
Yeah, and it's good. We do that with a lot of stuff. Like, I didn't watch a lot of the Food Network before we got together. Ooh. I wasn't a big Food Network person. She's
God
all about
bless
the Food
her for
Network.
That, man.
So we watch, when we're not like watching a show where there's no sporting event on, that's usually our go-to.
Yeah.
We're watching the news or we're watching the Food Network at night.
So the binge note, 6 episodes away from being all the way caught up in Stranger Things.
Okay, you're almost there.
I think we did it in a week.
Yeah, you were missing out,
addicted.
Man.
Yesterday, we did laundry in the morning before we did the zoo thing.
Yeah.
And we watched 3 episodes of Stranger Things. And I was like, we should probably get moving and do something today and not watch Stranger Things. But
that is, I would argue, I was having a conversation with a buddy over the weekend. That might be the most bingeable show out there. It's just so easy. It's fun. It's entertaining. It keeps you, every episode keeps you roped in.
Yeah, I think there's like other shows that might be easier.
Okay. Well, I don't find it overly intense.
No,
too.
I'm with you there. I'm also trying to catch up and watch The Good Place, which was on NBC.
Oh, network television.
I said the same thing. And then the writer of it, I guess, is the same guy who wrote for Parks and Rec. And there are still some network television shows that I think are very well done. It just, the generic network television brand in general is gone. But sure. That one's 22-minute episodes.
See, those are nice. That's the best part about network television. The Office was that way.
Yes.
Like, it's just that's why The Office might be actually the most bingeable show, just because they're so quick and easy.
The Office or Seinfeld probably wins that category.
Because you could sit there for 2 hours and get like 6 episodes in.
Yeah, you get a lot in. Yeah.
Rattle through all of them, man.
So let me ask you about this HBO thing real quick.
Okay.
So I'm canceling HBO. Well, turns out, right after I text you, coincidentally, got an email. Hey, find out what's new on HBO. And I said, canceled HBO. What's going on? Went to HBO. My account's still open.
Oh.
I got a thing on my profile. It says your next billing will be in March. I thought, what? Contacted customer service. They directed me to go to Amazon Apps to cancel. I'm totally confused now. I'm like,
Amazon Apps?
What are you talking about? Go to Amazon. Click up customer service. I start chatting with this fine gal. She tells me she has no record of me getting HBO on Amazon. And I go, so what do I do? And she goes, well, HBO has to cancel it. We can't cancel it on our end. You didn't do it through us. And I said, I know, but HBO directed me towards you. She goes, I don't know what to tell you, sir, but HBO has to be the one that canceled. Contact HBO again. Say, hey, I thought I canceled. They tried to direct me back to Amazon.
Wait, what the hell
is
happening?
So now I'm in this back and forth where I can't stop paying for something I don't want anymore. Sure. Probably because they don't want to lose the $15. But Amazon is very, very, they're holding their ground here. We did not start this account with you. And I agree. I never went to Amazon and signed up for HBO.
Right.
So now I'm in this, like, I have HBO, but I don't have HBO, and I can't cancel HBO, but I've already canceled HBO. I don't know what to do.
This is really weird.
This is when you start just saying lawyer as many times as you can.
I'm thinking
in a
about
sentence.
It. Because even the streaming, the YouTubes, the Hulus, the PlayStation.
Just start
views,
saying lawyer and who do I contact for legal action.
That is really weird.
It's very, very strange, man. Because even the streaming television networks, the Hulus, the PlayStation views.
Sure.
It is easy. It is drop down. Cancel membership.
Boom, you're out of there.
And they don't even like care why or doesn't matter. And you can sign up 3 days again.
Somebody said you can contact your credit card and stop the payment. Maybe just go that route. Say, I canceled this. I no longer want to pay for it. Don't allow the transaction to go through.
That might be the way to go, but I'm worried that HBO charges a few months. And then if I ever want to go back to HBO, because I'm sure I will,
sure,
they're going to say, well, you owe us $150 in back payment.
I had no clue that the two are even connected, how that even works.
Dude, now, I didn't know this till yesterday.
So I'm a newer Amazon bro.
Because all I do is Fire Stick. I don't have a Comcast cable thing. Like, I do internet with Comcast and Fire Stick.
Well, and that's the weird thing, too, is because you're a Prime member, right? So you get a lot of, so you can stream the stuff on Amazon. There's a lot of HBO shows on Amazon. Which is like that surprised me when I first looked. So maybe they're connected in some way in that regard. But
Amazon is, man, they're saying, look, all you have is a Prime account. You don't have anything HBO related with us.
Right.
And HBO is being the weird one here.
They're the one that's screwing you over.
Because I thought I clicked cancel account, confirm.
Sure.
I never ended up getting an email for it. My next email from HBO was a billing invoice.
Deal said this is an episode of Seinfeld. It totally is.
I mean, it kind of turned out that way. Yeah.
Back, forth. What the hell's going on? Well, as long as you're still on HBO, you might as well catch up on The Outsider before it's too late. Also, Larry David was humping a sex doll on Sunday night.
Oh, there
you
go.
And it was awesome television.
Okay, well, I'll have to do that, but quite confusing, man. It shouldn't be that hard to cancel something.
Yeah, somebody said, are you using a Fire Stick? Did you sign up with a Fire Stick?
I signed up for HBO before we fully went in on the Fire Stick. But again, if Amazon is telling me it's not on their end, who do we trust here?
I feel like I trust Amazon in this back and forth.
See, that's kind of where I lean, but I'm also like, well, they're also running the entire world right now, so maybe this is a way to keep more people.
Jeff Bezos did just buy a $165 million house.
Yeah, he did. He's also donating $10 billion to climate change, as if it's just like nothing for him.
No big deal. It's like 1% of his income.
A 10 of $150 billion? Okay, yeah. I can live on $40 billion. That's good. Okay.
Nothing to see here.
All right. Well, we had a good day off. Sorry we missed you. I tuned into the Will Cain show. It is god awful. So there's that hot take.
Sorry about that, everybody. We're back
coming
today.
Up next. This was a legit tease. Coming up next on the Will Cain show. I'm just giving him a southern accent because he's
got a bit of a vibe to him.
He panders a certain direction. Coming up next on the Will Cain show, let's start looking at basketball. It's basketball season now. I'm like, really?
Welcome to the year, man.
I know that accent was going kind of a different direction, but you see what we're dealing with there.
This is like what I would do a show if you weren't here, man. Hey, you guys know basketball's going on? The season already started. It was just the All-Star break.
I thought how many people in their car that Will Cain is saying this to is like, you know what? He's right. It is basketball season. Maybe there's a lot of them out there. I don't know.
They've already played 60 games. What the hell's happening?
But he was acting like the season has, like, nothing's happened. He's like, let's start looking into what's going on in the NBA. Oh, pretty cool tease there for the billion-dollar partnership you got there, Will.
Yeah, that's one of those, man. Every year they tell us we get President's Day off and we do like a double take, like, wait, what? Okay. I mean, you're not going to fight it. The company gives you a day off. You're taking the day off. But we are just as surprised as every listener out there when we find out we don't have to work on President's Day.
My daughter goes, why do you have President's Day off? I go, I don't know. The company observed it. She goes, what do you do for President's Day? I was like, I don't know. I've never observed it.
You don't do anything. You just have a day off.
I don't really need to say thank you to people that were paid a good salary and chose to go in that profession.
Hey, thanks, George Dubb.
Thanks for all you guys do.
I did see a thing on Twitter yesterday, and I fully agree with it. Can we move President's Day to voting day?
I would have no problem with that at all.
Give everybody the day off. Like, why is it randomly in February? We just got through November and December days off. People get MLK
because
day off.
It sandwiches George Washington and Abraham Lincoln's birthdays.
Yeah.
Oh, there haven't been any presidents after them.
A lot of important presidents. Like, that's a little bias right there. Okay, we're just picking two out of the whole bunch.
We made a mountain with four heads. We can't add any more heads to that mountain. You know that, right?
Just make it election day. Everybody go and vote for president. You get the day off work. You don't have to worry about it. Problem solved.
Voting should be a day off nationally. That's an entirely different conversation and one that we're not going to dive into today, but I'm glad you brought it up. We got a good one today, a lot to get to. There's a rumor in Miami. We got this Daytona 500 crash. It almost killed a dude.
Yeah, that was wild.
They had to reschedule the race entirely. I wonder how many people even knew that.
I did actually see that it was rained out on Sunday, yeah.
So we'll get to that. We got some NFL, college football, some All-Star weekend stuff, and we're going to start there with the All-Star game. New format this year. Did you like it? Did you tune in? I admit, I think they did a great job with it. We'll start there with the All-Star game. Dirt and Sprague with you on 1080 The Fan. Well, you are the one. All right, welcome back in 1218 on The Fan. We got the Daily Ticker coming up. We have two stops to make on that one. The first one is going to be in Daytona. Man, that crash, I don't know how many people really watch the Daytona 500. I don't know where it's at popularity-wise.
That's one where I think you don't watch the race, but you can't escape the highlights.
Well, when I first started working, I used to watch that race religiously, and I would just say over the years I've kind of grown out of needing to watch it. I don't really follow NASCAR like I used to.
I think you reflect the Daytona 500 ratings over the last 5-6 years.
Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. But scary scene down there. So we're going to Daytona first, and then we're going to stay in the state with this Miami rumor. And we're going to be joined at 12:36 by Radio.com Sports NFL insider Armando Salgura with a look at the Herbert or Tua rumor.
Mm.
Some people are saying the Dolphins might be looking at Herbert now, a little over Tua. So Armando is going to join us and brought to you by 5-Hour Energy now in 2 tropical flavors. But the All-Star game, they changed their format.
That they did, Bob.
They started a new game in the first 3 quarters. They combined those scores. They went into the fourth, and they had a tribute to Kobe Bryant. So whatever that team score was, they went up 24 points, and that was the end of the ball game. It seemed a bit out there because Joe's updates that day, and sure, everybody else's updates explaining this in an update form wasn't great. But it's pretty easy format to follow. It's just a new game for 3 quarters. You're keeping track of the scores along the way. You add them, you put them together, and they call it the Elam ending. But they dedicated the 157 to Kobe because they were at 133, 24 away from 157. Your first thoughts of watching it? Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it live, actually. We were on a date night on Saturday night, and the only reason that I ended up watching it was because of you.
Well, the game is Sunday.
Or Sunday, yeah. What the hell was I doing Sunday? I was thinking of the slam dunk thing. I'm an
idiot.
Yeah, I was golfing doing something on Sunday. I got back, but I didn't watch it live. But you and Nepper were in the group chat talking about how awesome it was, and this is great, and going back and forth. And I thought, well, maybe I missed out on something here. So they actually re-ran it on TNT later that night, and I ended up watching most of the game. Now, here's what I'll say. The first 3 quarters are the same. There's no the only difference is you have kids in the crowd that are cheering about getting $100,000 donations, which is a cool twist, at least, that there's some money going to good causes to whatever city that they're playing the All-Star game in.
I'm glad you heard that. I don't know if Reggie Miller told you enough during the broadcast that the kids were chanting Giannis or LeBron the whole game.
He is insufferable. Don't even get me started on that. But so that's the only twist. The first 3 quarters are, I mean, there's no difference. There's like 100 dunks. There's nobody playing defense. It's wide open. No difference there. The difference came in the fourth quarter. Now, the All-Star game has always had a somewhat competitive fourth quarter. I will grant them that. This took it to a level that I don't know if I've ever seen. Now, maybe there's All-Star games from before I started watching the NBA that they took it really seriously, like Pete Rose back in the day running over catchers, that kind of thing. But to get that level of urgency, and I mean, Kyle Lowry took like 3 charges. You had guys with hard fouls that were going up for dunks. Like, I never thought I would see something like that in an All-Star game. And it was such an eye-opener because we've always said about those formats and All-Star games is if you could get the buy-in from the athletes, and I don't blame them for not caring. It's a meaningless game for the most part outside of the significance of being named an All-Star. They don't get anything from it. So I don't blame them for not buying in. But there's always that what if of how great would it look if you had the best against the best going at it at full speed, full strength. Let's see who can win. Good defense, you know, selling out on everything. It was an amazing product. A lot of free throws. That was the only criticism I had. Mm-hmm. The game ended on a free throw, but I was glued to my TV when I ended up watching it, and it was a great change for the All-Star game.
I'm normally one that fully expects and anticipates the backlash an All-Star weekend gets. I don't know where it stems, but like the NBA All-Star weekend seems to get it worse than others.
Well, the Pro Bowl,
we make fun of the Pro Bowl, but the Pro Bowl doesn't... the NBA cares about its All-Star weekend, and I think the NFL doesn't. I think the NFL is cool. We're the Pro Bowl. We know what we're getting here.
People will watch no matter what.
Baseball cares. They've had their back and forth, right? Home field advantage, no home field advantage, but they don't largely get made fun of for it. And hockey's is one that I don't know if enough people tune in outside a hockey fan to care, but I almost always expect the NBA to be crapped on for the weekend. That being said, I thought it was one of the best All-Star weekends maybe in my entire life. Great 3-point contest. Great dunk contest and a fantastic change to their game that made it, as you said, very competitive. I've seen All-Star games in the last 3-4 minutes get competitive. That rivaled a, oh my God, game 7 type vibe in a second round or a conference finals type feel. I'm not saying it's the exact same because there's more on the line in those moments, but it had that feeling if you watched it. Watching Giannis and LeBron go back and forth. Giannis gets the block. LeBron bodies him down low and gets the ball knocked off his foot. James Harden passing up the game-winning layup.
Game-winning layup.
Either because you're nervous of the moment or because you're just so used to kicking it out now. Kawhi being the MVP, Chris Paul being an incredible comeback player for Team LeBron.
He had a great game.
It sucked that Dame couldn't play, so I get some people in Portland maybe not caring about it as much, but Dame added to that would have been even better.
Yeah, you imagine him out there on one of those teams playing in that fourth quarter.
I mean, him on Team LeBron would have been deadly.
That was my thought, too, because I don't follow the whole draft thing, so I don't pay attention to who's on what team. Unless I knew Dame was on Team LeBron just because he's the Blazer and we get notifications on that kind of stuff. But watching the fourth quarter of that game, I thought to myself, is Giannis an idiot? Because those teams
He's really bad at picking.
Those teams were incredibly lopsided.
It's very unfair.
Like, I'm looking over at like all NBA first teamers, and then it's, you know, and look, you know, Siakam's a good player. Kemba Walker's a good player. Like, I'm not taking anything away from them.
Yeah, they're not Ben Simmons and James Harden and Kawhi Leonard.
What the hell's going on? Their go-to guy was like Joel Embiid in the post. He was all they had in those final couple minutes.
Do you think it's important, though, for the weekend and for the game to matter? That's what I kept thinking about, was as great as I enjoyed that Elam ending and this new change that they've had, which, by the way, hey, Big Three, we get it. You do the same ending. Stop with this whole we need credit crap. Like, you're not the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
And every great company steals from other little companies. That's called life. Happens on our radio show all the time. People steal ideas all the time.
Right.
But with that being said, is it important for the NBA to make this matter? Or do people like you and I not matter anymore in this conversation and just should accept it that this is for teenagers and for young 20-somethings?
Yeah, I think that's the interesting question about all All-Star games is you're always going to have a certain core fan that's going to watch, right? Like, you're an NBA bro.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to watch the NBA All-Star weekend every year. No matter how good or bad, the tweaks here and there, you love the sport, you're passionate about it, and you're going to watch. Now, I'm that way with baseball. Every single year, no matter what they change with the Home Run Derby or the All-Star game, does it mean something? Does it not mean something? I'm going to sit down and watch the game because I love the sport and I love watching All-Star weekend. I've always struggled with the idea that can you get the fringe fan to tune in? And I think Major League Baseball was short-sighted in the thought process, but they wanted to do this with the All-Star game, and that's why they had home field advantage for the World Series on the line. That was their idea of how do we rope more people in? How do we get more people to watch? And at least for a number of years, I think it worked for them, and then you kind of got tired of the idea, and you thought, this is dumb. Why is home field advantage being decided by the winner of a meaningless game in July? The All-Star game, I remember reading about the changes. I didn't bash them because it's so easy to do that in the moment and then before we've even seen what it looks like. I just thought, I'll be curious to see the results on this. I see Twitter going crazy. I see text messages going crazy. I watch the replay. And guess what? I'm going to watch the game next year.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to watch the first three quarters. I don't need to see that. It's dunk contests and highlights. Like, if I'm around a TV, maybe. But I'm going to make sure that I get to see that fourth quarter because that was incredible entertainment. So in that regard, I think it was successful in trying to rope more people into the product.
I think if you keep the ending and the players bring the same intensity, it's just something that can grow and become more well-respected again. Right? At some point, the All-Star Weekend actually meant something to sports fans. And I don't know where it stopped. Maybe it was post-Jordan. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it stopped becoming important for fans to feel like they need to tune in. Now, look, they got 7.5 million viewers on average, but that's an uptick. They actually had more ratings this year. The cynic in me wants to say, well, how many of those people just watch for the Kobe tribute stuff?
Sure.
Versus how much enjoyed what we got to see, which anytime you get the greatest players, sometimes in the NBA Finals, you get these mismatches. You get the team of randomness versus the superstar player that you knew was going to get there. And it's not great. But if you can get all of those guys to buy in the fourth quarter the way that they did, assuming the game's somewhat close,
sure,
there's nothing better to watch than the best players.
No.
Actually, it's just alpha on alpha. It's I'm going to score on you, you're not going to score on me, and going back and forth for about 20 minutes, because I think that fourth quarter was a half hour long.
Well, that was the beautiful part of it, is it's an untimed quarter. There's no commercials, there's no breaks, there's no
exactly.
clock, because you're going after a point total, which was great. So there was no stoppages in the play outside of Reggie Miller being annoying. That was really the only issue. And the only other things I'll point out on it, and it's been said a million times, but I'll repeat it one more time. You got to tweak it so it doesn't end on a free throw.
I'm with you there.
That was anticlimactic.
Didn't like it.
After all the entertainment. And then the other part of it is I do wonder, and I think it's something to keep an eye on for next year, how much of the buy and the intensity had to do with Kobe.
Sure.
That was the only thing I thought was, man, the mama mentality kind of thing going on right now. That was just a couple of weeks ago. Clearly the emotions are still in the building for all the guys. They're wearing 24-2. They're playing for 24 extra points, right? It's all a Kobe tribute. And I wonder to myself, will this continue? And I hope it does, because it was incredible for the NBA.
All right, we got two stops to make on the Daily Ticker, and we'll do it next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, ticker time here in Portland, Oregon, but we're going to take the ticker to one state today, the state of Florida, for two different stories. We'll start with our friend Zach Dean of the Daytona Beach News Journal on Twitter, at Zach Dean DBNJ. Give him a follow for all things sports. The Daytona 500 yesterday rescheduled from Sunday, and Ryan Newman crashes at the very, very end of the thing. He was leading, and he was transported to a hospital. Non-life-threatening injuries, but no further word, and Zach joins us now. Zach, thanks for hopping on with us here in Portland, man. I'll just start. What is the latest that we know about Ryan Newman and his big crash?
Yeah, I mean, as of today, there's not much new information. The team, Roush Fenway, Ryan's team, released a statement a few hours ago saying, you know, he was still in the hospital and his condition hadn't changed. Obviously, they're sticking with the non-life-threatening injuries, but still in serious condition. I assume they're probably going to release another statement at some point this afternoon, but all we know today is that he's still here in Daytona. He's still at the hospital, and beyond that, no one really knows anything, so it's kind of a waiting game.
What was your reaction when that happened, man? I mean, I'm not a huge NASCAR guy, so I don't watch races from start to finish, but you see highlights when things like that take place, you know, at the end of the race, especially, and I was sitting there like, oh my, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that. What was your reaction when you saw it?
Yeah, when you have races at Daytona and Talladega, and obviously I'm at all the Daytona races, so those wrecks aren't unusual. The flipping up in the air really isn't that unusual. It actually used to happen a lot back in the good old days, as they say, but they made the cars so safe now that it's really tough to get them up in the air, but they do still go up in the air like they do. But I got concerned after he came down and then the car behind him hit him head on going 180 miles an hour. That's something you don't see. And I think I've been watching NASCAR for a long time, and I've seen plenty of cars flip, but to flip and then have someone hit you right in the driver's side door, that's when I think, you know, everybody in the media center got quiet, and you kind of knew when you saw him get hit the second time that this is probably going to be a little bit different than the other ones. And it was pretty evident quickly, because I got to tell you, about 15 minutes after the race ended, and you know, they still hadn't got him out of the car, and the ambulances were there, and they were trying to get him out of the car. But I looked in the media center, and a couple of the NASCAR officials who are in the media center with us, who are a couple rows over from us, I kind of looked over, and they were quickly packing their bags, and they about ran out of there. And once I saw them scrambling and looking concerned, I knew that something was wrong.
Yeah. Zach Dean is our guest, Daytona Beach News Journal. The Daytona 500 yesterday, Denny Hamlin wins his third, but Ryan Newman, who was leading going to the end there, he ended up just hitting the wall in a horrific crash. He was transported to a hospital. The way that they described the scene within, or that you wrote about, sorry, not they, you, when you wrote about this on the Daytona Beach Journal, that I read it this morning, of just describing what it looked like, do you feel like NASCAR responded quick enough for something like this? I mean, this is kind of what happened with Earnhardt. Was he gets in an accident, they kind of take their time, they get over there. By the time everything's done, he's basically dead. Do you think that they should be going quicker? Did it feel like that they did a fast enough job of getting him out of that car and transporting him to a hospital?
I thought they did a fast enough job getting there. I mean, they got there. The wheels were still spinning by the time the medical people got there, and they quickly put the fires out. And I think the first concern is you see the car, you know, on its hood, and there's fuel pouring out, and then you see flames, and you're thinking, oh my God, I hope someone gets there to put those flames out quickly, which they did. And the problem is, when you have a car like that on its hood, you can't get them out until you flip the car over. So unfortunately, it takes a little while to get those cars flipped over, and I'm not sure how they could have done it any quicker. They got it flipped over, and then the problem after that was, once they got it flipped over, they still couldn't get him out, because, you know, he had taken that impact so hard on the driver's side that he was basically crushed in there. So then you get to a point where you have to cut open the car and basically cut the whole, or I guess what's left of the hood off the car, and then get them out. So I thought they got there plenty quick enough, and they put the fire out. And then at that point, it's just about, you know, getting the car flipped over and cutting them out of the car. So I think, I mean, I was out there on pit road when they put them in the ambulance and they sped them away, and that was right around 8:10. I took a video of it. It was right at 8:10 when the ambulance put its lights on and started going towards the hospital. And I think the race ended right around 7:45, 7:50. So, I mean, you've got a 20-minute response time to get into the hospital, and the hospital's literally right across the speedway. So I'm not sure how they could have done it any faster.
That's good news to hear. An unfortunate event for the Super Bowl of NASCAR. Zach Dean of the Daytona Beach News Journal, our guest here, as Ryan Newman suffers a horrific accident. Zach, thanks so much for the write-up. It was good to read about, and thank you for hopping on with us to give us the latest, man.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. There we go. Zach Dean on Twitter, at Zach Dean, DBNJ. Well, let's stay in Florida, but let's go to Miami and pivot from NASCAR to the NFL. On the line is Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Armando Salgura. Insider calls are brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Now, in two great tropical flavors. Armando, there is a rumor about Justin Herbert over Tua. What is the latest with this? Are we hearing the Dolphins really might be leaning that way?
Yeah, it's not so much if they're leaning that way. I would say it's probably more that the scales are not tipped in Tua's favor like everybody expected it to be and like everyone thought it was. You know, Tua is obviously a very talented player. And he showed that at Alabama. But the problem is he didn't get a chance to show it as often as maybe the Miami Dolphins or any other team would like because he had some durability issues. And so the Dolphins, and I would say any other team that is interested in him, takes that into account. And they measure that against Justin Herbert, who, you know, is 6'6" and 237 pounds and has a rocket for an arm and played all the games that he was available to play and asked to play at Oregon. And no, he doesn't have the same accuracy, but that other stuff kind of, you know, helps him. And it's not a slam dunk for Tua.
That's interesting. What would the reaction be from fans down there if they ended up going this route? Because it feels like the Dolphins and Tua have been, as you kind of alluded to, connected at the hip for a long time. They pivot, they go Herbert. What would the reaction be from people down there?
A lot of smashed televisions, a lot of anger. There would be, if social media is any sort of barometer of what the feeling of Dolphins fandom is about, you know, there would not be a lot of happy souls, you know, rooting for the Miami Dolphins. And the primary reason for that is that Justin Herbert reminds a lot of people of Ryan Tannehill. And Ryan Tannehill, God bless him, he went to the AFC Championship game with the Tennessee Titans this year. But the previous 7 years were pretty much wasted seasons for the Miami Dolphins, waiting for Ryan Tannehill to be the guy and be, you know, the guy that everyone thought would lead them to some sort of playoff competence, which he never did. And so they don't want a repeat of that. They don't want, let's do this again. Let's get rid of Ryan Tannehill 1 year and then draft Ryan Tannehill the next year. That's just not something they want.
Yeah. Our Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Armando Salgura, our guest here in Miami. The rumor of Justin Herbert over Tua picked up over the weekend. Let me flip it then. Let's go the opposite way from Dolphin fan and let's look at it from a Duck fan perspective because – look, the Ducks have had some quarterbacks go to the NFL and not succeed. The last thing they want is another one to go to the NFL and not succeed. Why are the Miami Dolphins a team that Duck fan in their heart of hearts think, okay, if Justin's going to fail, it's going to be because of him and not going to a bad organization? What about Miami tells you they can be trusted with a young franchise quarterback?
Nothing. If I'm an Oregon Duck, if I am a Justin Herbert fan, if I'm his family, I want him to go to the Los Angeles Chargers. They have more talent. It is a situation where they're better set up, I would say, to succeed quicker. The Dolphins, you know, Dan Marino retired after the 1999 season. Tell me what great quarterback they've had in the 21 seasons after that. I'll wait for the next 4 weeks before you come up with someone that you've made up out of thin air, because that person doesn't exist. So the point is, the Dolphins have been in the desert. They've had this desert experience at quarterback after Marino. And so if I'm Justin Herbert, I'm not buying the whole, you know, Miami Dolphins will turn me into a star narrative if that's what is out there. However, I'd like to turn around and maybe hand the ball to Melvin Gordon if he's still with the Chargers. I'd like to, you know, have an offense that seems to be better suited to be better quicker than what the Dolphins have.
Mm. How dare you disrespect Chad Pennington like that, man? Come on. I did want to ask, though. I mean, Miami, we know they're drafting fifth, and it's just a unique draft because you got Cincinnati number one, who we feel like is going to take Joe Burrow, or if not, another quarterback. And then you got 2, 3, and 4 in the draft, likely not taking a quarterback, with the Redskins already having Haskins. I know the Detroit rumors have been out there, but maybe they don't take a quarterback at 3, and then the Giants got their guy. It feels like, how much craziness do you expect in those top 5 picks? And it feels like maybe somebody potentially swooping in with a big haul to go land one of these quarterbacks with the 2nd, 3rd, or 4th pick.
I expect a ton of craziness, and I expect for it to be feeling a little crazier after the Indianapolis Combine next week. People around the NFL are starting to get whispers that Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow's not feeling the Cincinnati Bengals a whole lot right now. Even though he's from Ohio, by the way, you know, Carson Palmer came out and talked about how the Bengals are not a place that you would want to go as a young quarterback. They don't always do what is necessary to win. Solomon Wilcott, who played for the Bengals as well, chimed in as well, and he absolutely agreed. And, oh, by the way, the guy who is training Joe Burrow right now is named Jordan Palmer, who happens to be Carson Palmer's brother. And so there is a feeling that Joe Burrow, he's having second thoughts about being the first overall pick to the Bengals, especially when his own narrative has changed. He said that he would go anywhere that he needs to go and play for that team. This was about a month ago. About a week and a half ago, it was, well, we'll see when we get through the process, because I also have leverage of where I can go. Mm-hmm. That's a change. That is a different thought altogether. And so I wouldn't doubt that he might want to ask the Bengals, hey, you know what, try to get me out of here. He might try to pull an Eli Manning. He might try to pull a John Elway. And he's got the leverage to do it, frankly.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch, no doubt. Can't wait for the combine. It's going to just heat up more and more as the NFL draft awaits. The Herbert over Tua rumor we had to discuss with our good friend Armando Salguero of Radio.com Sports NFL Insider. Armando, thanks so much for the time, man. We always appreciate having you in Portland.
It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. There we go. Good stuff from Armando Salguero and Zach Dean, Daytona and Miami.
Look at that's for sure the first ever NASCAR stop we've done on the Daily Ticker. So props to you for booking that.
Could end up being the last. I don't know. I don't know.
See what happened
to Talladega.
That was wild, man. I mean, I don't watch the Daytona 500, but you can't escape those highlights. You see it. You just watch it on loop. Like, how was he alive? It makes zero sense.
It's a scary scene, no doubt. All right, I want to talk about the Herbert, though, and the Dolphin thing. Herbert in Miami, a good fit. Do you trust the team? Because Armando sure doesn't. That's next on The Fan. All right, we got baseball to get to in the second hour, as every player is just teeing off right now. It's like watching 5-year-olds at T-ball.
Did you see the bro who showed up at the first Astros live BP banging a trash can?
I did. They said he quickly left, but he hung around for a couple batters, banged the trash can, and then walked away. Expect that, by the way, at every away game they're at.
God, give that guy a medal.
Yeah, and Houston media, the only one still digging their heels in to defend this crap. Everybody else is basically like, yeah, get out of here.
His story is not going away anytime soon.
Very quickly, because we're already up against it. That's what happens to you along in the ticker. I like that we asked Armando Salguero. He goes and says, Dolphin fan would smash their TV if they take Herbert over Tua. Mm-hmm. And then when I said, how should Duck fan feel about Herbert going to Miami? Should there be any confidence? And he goes, no.
Everybody's throwing their TV through a window.
Like, so Dolphin fan feels that they have this privilege to say who should not come to Miami and yet not acknowledge.
I think every fan base has that to a certain extent, right? Like, if you're if you take the local angle out of it and you're just a general NFL fan drafting in the top five,
yeah,
who would you rather your team take, Justin Herbert or Tua?
I don't think I have an opinion on that yet.
See, and I do. I know the injury thing is there, but
injury thing is a very big concern for me.
Very big concern. I'm still willing to roll the dice on Tua. There's something that we didn't see from Herbert.
But what's the upside of Herbert?
Sure.
How good can he be? Give me a comp. Can he be Phillip Rivers? Can he be Eli?
I would say
no.
At
his very best.
I would say no right now. I haven't seen enough. But again, quarterbacks are the hardest thing to judge, so I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But I would say
you hate your own quarterback.
I would say no right now. I think the comparable that I've used, and I think Ross Tucker used it on a podcast this weekend, is Josh Allen. He's big. He's strong. I think if you use his legs as an asset, there can be a plus there. I'm not saying the guy's going to be a total bum, but he just hasn't shown it consistently enough as a passer over the last 3 years. He didn't improve year in and year out. He didn't show you what you wanted to see if you had confidence in him being a top five pick. I'm not surprised the teams are falling in love with him, though, because I predicted this all along. Like, you get next to the guy and you can't help but be in awe.
You get a quarterback erection. Yeah,
he's massive. He's got a huge arm. He looks like a defensive end, man. Like, he's that big. So I get why NFL teams are drooling over him. But Tua, I thought, showed that he was the better passer. He was more accurate. The injury concern is there. There's no doubt about it. They each have their question marks, but I get why he says that about Miami fan.
Here's the tough thing, and try to tell me what you pick here. One guy is run-of-the-mill, good, not great, not bad, but good quarterback. You're not entirely sure if you win a championship with him. The other guy might be the next Russell Wilson, but you're not sure he's staying healthy.
Stay healthy, yeah.
What are you doing with that pick?
I know.
Yeah, and not to say that Tua can't be healthy for 16 years and have a wonderful Hall of Fame career. He absolutely could. But I think that's kind of what some teams will be looking at, right? Big, strong, confident, sneaky athletic kid who might just be good and never great. So that could be a longevity of consistency, or do you take the flyer on the 6 foot, three-time injured in the last year and a half, 70 completion percentage throws, Russell Wilson type athletic ability, but it might not last.
Right. That's the beauty of being an NFL GM.
Good luck picking quarterbacks, GMs.
If you choose wrong, you're going to lose your job and you're going to set your franchise back because you got to give these guys 3-4 years to try and develop. So you're committing a number of years to whichever guy you end up going with. It's a very tough question. I would still side with Tua just because I think there's more upside there, and I've seen more. I have more trust in him being an NFL quarterback than I do Justin Herbert. And it's so hard to view these storylines at this point in the calendar of anything more than a smokescreen. You know, the Cincinnati one, we had a bro on last week. He said there's nothing to it.
Tyler
bro,
Dragon said it's fake news.
It's fake news. Nothing's going to happen there. But Armando is saying he's hearing that there is some smoke there. So we'll see how that turns out. But I think what makes this draft so awesome is that you have, as I alluded to there with him, the second, the third, and the fourth pick, none of them are likely going to take quarterbacks. Unless Detroit shocks everybody and they do trade Stafford, that's the only one that's a maybe, because Washington's not taking a quarterback and the Giants aren't taking a quarterback. So if you end up with that reality that none of them do, dude, game on, man. Does somebody try and move up ahead of Miami and take Tua? And that's why a lot of people think they're throwing these smoke screens out of, oh, go ahead, trade your future. We don't even really want Tua. We kind of want Justin Herbert anyways.
Right, right.
So there's all these smoke screens that are out there, and it's going to be crazy to see how it all plays out.
All right, we got a loaded second hour. We're going to start with the Houston Astros continuing to get ripped by Major League Baseball, but should the bigger culprit here at this point be Rob Manfred? Let's talk about that. Kick off hour number two, Dirt and Sprague, back with more on The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.